another episode of Behind the Vinyl, with Darren and Nicholas.
Welcome back. Another episode of Behind the Vinyl. This week, we're talking to Miles Kennedy of Alter Bridge and Slash and the Conspirators fame. He's back with his second solo record, The Ides of March, which is out now. Check it out. Absolutely amazing record. And yet again, showing a different variety of the talents of Miles Kennedy. A great chat. Always a great chat with Miles. And do check out the record because it's absolutely brilliant. Hope you guys enjoy, and we will see you next time. Alrighty, Miles Kennedy, welcome to Behind the Vinyl. Nice to see you, mate.
It's great to see you. What a pleasant surprise. I love it.
Likewise. And really nice to be talking to you about your sophomore solo album. Lovely. You know, I know you've talked to Nicholas before earlier about the record. So let's go through it. Firstly, it's out today. Congratulations on the release, you know.
Thank you.
May 14. Wonderful. One thing I kind of picked up pretty quick, you've seemed to really get more into the guitar. It seems to, that's kind of, you know, your playing is amazing on this. Your slide playing is all over this as well. Is that something you've kind of delved back into?
Yeah, I think I rediscovered my love and obsession for the guitar. I feel like I'm 15 years old again, you know. Like, there's a period there where I remember it really well, actually. I was probably 22, 23, and I remember driving with a friend and saying, you know what, I'm gonna shift away from the guitar, you know, obsession, and focus that more on songwriting. And so really I spent the last few decades really focusing on that side of the craft. And then I was touring a few years ago for the Year of the Tiger on that solo record, and we were changing the arrangements to basically make them better suited for a live environment. And during that process, I discovered how much I missed improvising and playing guitar. You know, because I play in these two bands with Mark Tremonti and with Slash, where they're these guitar icons. And so, you know, I'm not going to spend a lot of time improvising and playing in those realms. And it was suddenly the realization how important that was to me to play and you know, because to me, I look at improvising and guitar playing, it's very zen. You know, it's very, there's almost a meditation. I go into like this strange trance. Have you ever had a conversation as a guitar player's noodling? And you're only going to get like half their brain, because they're kind of like, you can say, well, what'd you want to have for dinner tonight? And I don't know. It's like, because they're just like in a hypnotized by the guitar. And so I missed that. And I wanted to get back into it.
Shifting round, the more they stay the same. Please don't tell me that it's over. It breaks my heart. I fear we'll never make amends. Where is the love within these borders? When will this end? Why can't we all just get along? Why can't we? Come back together, we might all get out alive. But the war that is raging between the hearts of men, for ideas not worth saving, that might break us in the end. We're
we see a telly sitting in the back there. You got like a nice cream telly sitting in the back.
It's one of the Blackguards. Blackguards are, you know, like between 1950, you had the Fender Broadcaster, in the 1954, and they had black pickguards. And so I've got, you know, real black pickguards, and I've got a bunch of nice. That's awesome. I love it. Good man. Yeah, but there's just something about those that I really love.
Yeah, beautiful guitar.
Are you constantly noodling on the guitar? Like, are you constantly playing every day?
Every day. Yeah. I kind of had to slow down, and I've just, truth be told, I've got this injury I'm trying to deal with, and I'm going tomorrow that they're going to do something, going to look at it and everything, but that's kind of slowed me down a little bit. It was actually kind of, it affected making the record, to be completely frank. Things were sailing along pretty well, but whatever's going on, it was flaring up. So there are days when we just had to stop recording guitars and let it heal a little bit, and then knock out what we could a few days later. But you know, this is the world of, you know, overuse. And for me, when I say I'm playing every day, I'm playing, like really playing. Like, it would get to the point where I'd be playing for 5 hours straight. So of course you're going to beat up your hand. You know, what do you expect, kid? It's like, you know, you're human. So it's something that you just get lost in. You know, I woke up this morning, I worked out a little bit, tried to get healthy, whatever. And then I went and grabbed one of the Blackguards and just sat there on the couch. And before you know it, it's, you know, I have interviews and so, yeah, man, I love it. I can't imagine life without that outlet. I really can't. I just, it's very important to me.
Nice. I don't know whether you follow Steve Vai, but he just had a similar thing. He's just coming off some rehab for his,
oh, really?
Yeah, I think he had tendonitis or carpal tunnel or something like
that. Oh, interesting. Yeah, that's what they're checking here. They're checking to make sure it's not one of those things, and we'll see.
So talking about just getting up, and the album of course is The Ides of March. From what I understand, you basically woke up one night or in the middle of a dream or in the morning, and that song, the title track, come to mind, and you sprung up out of bed and straight to the guitar, correct?
Correct. You are correct. It's not, there was an article that came out a while back that confused it with a different song called Wake Me When It's Over, where that song was written after I'd had a couple drinks, and it was written very quickly. This was, but they applied it to Ides of March, which actually is not true. What the actual reality is that, yes, I was waking up kind of in that dream state. And a lot of times when you're in that, as you're coming to, there's a lot of clarity as a writer. It's kind of like you're not, certain parts of your brain have not come to yet, and so it's not, you're not fighting, you're still kind of in that other consciousness, which is, I find, very very helpful with songwriting, because there's clarity. So as I was coming to, you know, da 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 da, and I heard the chord progression, and I was like, oh, I could lay here for another hour and stare at the ceiling and just be comfortable under the covers, or I could try and maybe chase this down. So I got up, and that was the beginning. That was the genesis of it. And it took, from that point forward, it took about another 6 months till I finally had all of the pieces together, and felt like it was a complete track. And so it was a long process.
Some say you never know. It's easy come, it's easy go. Some say they knew it from the start. Is nigh, that no one will get out alive. Some say it's written in the stars. Beware the Ides of March.
question about the album cover, because I'm guessing that's somewhere around where you live. Mm-hmm. But also, I mean, looking at that and looking, I know those surroundings, and I mean, there's a lot of woods and lakes and stuff like that. That's got to be like a constant inspiration, especially for the music on this album, you know, with the woods and the lakes and the nature and all that. I mean, you just have to look out your window and come up with stuff.
Yeah, it's look, I live in the Pacific Northwest. I live in a place called Spokane, Washington. And unfortunately, what's happening now is it's kind of getting discovered. The rest of the world is kind of picking up on this part of this area. So, you know, and that's cool. You know, it's a wonderful place. And I do love nature. And, you know, it's interesting. My story is I was originally kind of a city slicker. You know, when I was born initially in Boston, Massachusetts, a very metropolitan, very urban. And so then my mom remarried and my stepfather, we ended up living out in the woods initially. After we lived in a place called Nez Perce, Idaho for a little bit, and then when we moved to the Spokane area, I lived, you know, literally in the woods in a trailer home. And it was great. I was probably the best. As far as all my memories growing up, that those 3 or 4 years were my favorite, because nature, you know, I could go outside and your imagination would run wild and you could do so many things. You could climb the rocks, climb trees, and hey, look, there's a deer and there's a skunk. And it was just, I really fell in love with all of that. And so it's something that's never really left. And that's part of the reason that people always ask, they're like, why don't you live in, you know, Los Angeles, or why don't you live in New York? And my wife and I came really close, but I couldn't pull myself away from the wildlife, you know?
Nice. That's nice.
The album was written, what, March, April, May, 2020, right?
Yeah. Like pretty much in that area. Yeah.
Yeah. It's really, I find it really weird. Like you're in a, just in general, you know, bands are roughing it out for like 5 years, 6 years, 7 years. They have all this things to write about, you know, their life experiences and their struggles. And then they put out a record, and then they're expected for their second record, third record to have that same creativity. But there's no real story, you know. From that point on, they're just on the road, playing the gigs, you know what I mean? But suddenly, something with the pandemic, it's probably opened up a whole world of different experiences and you know, ability to write about, you know, the whole unknown that is this. Did you find that when writing this?
I did. You know, when I first started writing, it was at the beginning of all of this, and I didn't really know where it was going. And the further I into the process I went, and the longer that I realized that this was going to go on as far as the world kind of shutting down. It definitely informed the narrative of the record. And after a few months, I started to wonder, you know, I heard this, someone say this, I started to fear, you know, is this going to affect the shelf life of these songs? Are these just essentially all corn tunes, which I thought was kind of a fun way of looking at it. And how many artists are doing the same thing, or we're going to have this just in the next year or so, all these records coming out that were informed by the same thing. But then I had to stop and go, you know what, man, it's coming from a genuine place. You can't just, you can't let that affect the fact that you are, you can't, the songs are coming faster than you keep up with them. So just go with it. Cause you know what? I'd rather have that. I'd rather have an issue of maybe there's going to be a shelf life. Maybe these songs won't resonate to the same degree a few years from now. Although I try to be very careful to keep things ambiguous enough to where it could apply to various circumstances. That's something I've learned as a songwriter, instead of being completely direct and singing about, you know, well, in 2020, it was like, it's like, no, you keep it ambiguous, you know? But yeah, I was just I'm so inspired. I felt like, just go with it, man. Just don't question it and get her done.
Yeah. I remember talking to Marcia Cross, who's a vocal coach. Mm-hmm. I think she worked with Corey Taylor and whatnot. And I remember talking to her also about, you know, strange times, especially in the U.S. and everything that's going on also. But I remember her saying also that, you know, whatever happens, there's going to be some great music coming out of it. And that's kind of, there's a lot of truth in that, that stuff that happens and whatever it is in a country or around you, that must bring a lot of inspiration as well. And a reason for writing songs.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think that anything that enters a human's life, an artist's life, that they can draw from and draw from experience, you know, that's the thing. It's like, we've all gone through this. And so the things that we're all writing about are legitimate, you know, they're legitimate concerns or reflections. And so, you know, that's a great problem to have versus trying to write about things that you have no clue about, or things are so perfect and so ideal. And then you've got to concoct some sort of, you know, story that you're not connected with. And the thing about doing that is fans hear it. I mean, they know when it's not coming from an honest place, and they're like, don't try and BS us. You don't know what you're talking about.
Lost in an image like a ghost in time. It's ceremony of a last goodbye. A lonely silhouette against a tortured sky.
I want to talk about a few other people that are involved in this record. Firstly, Elvis. Yes. You're using Elvis again. You know, obviously, you got a relationship through Alter Bridge, through Slash as well. Was it obviously natural just to go back to Elvis to produce this record?
Yeah, Elvis is, you know, he's such a huge part of the the legacy for me. I think that when you have two decades worth of records that have been, or he's been at the helm for the majority of them, it's a trust thing. You know, you want to get into, if you're going to get into a situation and turn your sonic babies over to somebody to help refine the vision, you want to trust their instincts. Cause I've certainly been in situations where I've done that. And this was a long time ago, where you hand it over and you find you're not on the same page, and then suddenly it kind of ruins it for you. So once I found Elvis and I was like, okay, we are so in sync with one another. If it ain't broke, don't fix it is kind of the motto, you know. And I have friends that'd be like, you know, have you considered using a different producer and just to mix it up? And I've even done interviews where people have mentioned that here and there. And I'm kind of like, well, okay, I get where you're coming from, but understand where I'm coming from, which is that I'm very happy with his work. And also he's just one of my best friends. So it's a great relationship.
And look, you've worked with some other amazing producers anyway. So you've done it. You worked with Brendan O'Brien, for God's sake. You know?
Yeah, that was, he mixed the first Mayfield 4 record. And though he didn't produce, actually, little story, he was actually on the short list as far as one of our first choices for producing the Mayfield, that very first record. I mean, look, he's brilliant. I mean, obviously you just listen to his body of work. To even have him mix that first record. And I remember I was really intimidated by him. I was as intimidated by hanging out in the studio with Brendan O'Brien as I was meeting some of my musical idols. Like, because I was such a fan. I was a funny duck even in the late 80s when I first started getting records and reading the backs of records. I was always looking at the credits and the production credits. And so I knew who was doing what, who was mastering what, who was engineering. I was just really, really focused on all of that. And Brendan was just a force to be reckoned with, you know, by the time we worked with him. And so I remember sitting there and no one else is in the room and we were sitting at the console and he was playing one of the mixes for me. And he actually, I forgot about this. There was a little guitar solo at the end. It was a song called Always. And there was a little kind of solo. And now keep in mind, in the 90s, Kurt Cobain killed the guitar solo. So though I started off as a guitar geek, he killed that whole thing, which is part of the reason I focus more on songwriting. I thought, well, there's no point in focusing so much time on improvising and solos, because that just was, it wasn't in vogue for a long time. And I remember he stopped playing, the track got done, and he said, just kind of quietly just said, you know, you should play more guitar solos. and I was like, coming from Brendan O'Brien. And so that was always kind of in the back of my mind, leading to where, you know, with the Ides of March, is that I wanted to finally make that record where I play. And there was another experience. This was about 7 years ago. It was when I was jamming with Warren Haynes with Government Mule. We did a whole set of AC/DC covers. And I think I played guitar on one song. We kind of did we traded back and forth. And he's one of my all-time favorite guitar players, favorite musicians. I mean, he's like the Jedi Master, right? And it was the same thing. He made the same sort of comment, you should be playing more guitar. And so it was those little comments that were part of what made me want to make a guitar-centric record as a solo artist. And so I'm kind of grateful to those guys for kind of nudging me along.
Close your eyes to the world outside. It's a shitstorm. is coming soon. Wanna lay you down in a pretty gown. We got nothing left to lose. As it all burns down, at least I'll die with you. So baby, take me now, it's over. I'm afraid we've reached the end. But it might save me when it's over. To know I'm done with my best friend. Oh. 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 Oh.
I just recently spoke to Mike Fraser, who's been working with AC/DC for the last couple of records, and Brendan O'Brien produced, and the latest record as well, Power Up. Mike Fraser said that Brendan O'Brien kind of took over the role that Malcolm had.
Oh, so no kidding.
Was playing his stuff to Brendan, and Brendan was kind of guiding him into helping it turn into songs and stuff like that, which was pretty cool.
I was talking with somebody recently, I can't remember who it was, and they were talking about they were having a conversation with a engineer or a producer at a really well-known studio somewhere in the South. And I said, well, why am I spacing this? Who it was? Anyways, this producer had like all of these incredible guitar players, session players, like the best of the best, come through and do these sessions. And so this person I was talking to asked him, who was the best of all those guys that came through? And he said, Brendan O'Brien.
All right.
I was like, wow, no kidding. But I remember even when we were doing the Mayfield 4 session and when he was mixing that record, I remember him. He was such a well-rounded musician, or is such a well-rounded musician. He picked up a hurdy-gurdy. I think the hurdy-gurdy. I can never say it. Good. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, the hurdy-gurdy. Like you've heard on countless Zeppelin records and whatnot. And I remember he picked it up and just started playing it like it was just like his first instrument. And he's one of those guys. He's just incredibly talented.
Out.
and I for losing time. Here we are. I want you to control it.
Hey, speaking of Mayfield 4, the drummer, there's a drummer connection between those guys and your new record.
You are correct, sir. 20 points. that's the man himself, Zia Udine, who, in my opinion, is one of... And it's not just my opinion. Even the guys who record him, they tend to say the same thing, which is he's one of the best rock drummers, period. And nobody, it's just a shame that more people don't know about him, because he's, you know, we grew up together. We started playing in bands together when we were kids here in Spokane, and he had something really special back then. He had this pocket, it's his pocket, it's his feel. And he comes up with really creative drum parts as well. And so he played in the Mayfield 4. We played in a band together as kids called Bittersweet. And we were like this, you know, we were like a cover band, you know, teenagers, and we played the bars and we had concerts we put on ourselves, and it was a lot of fun. And then we reconnected in the mid 90s, put the Mayfield 4 together, and he's just brilliant. And so it seemed like a logical choice to reconnect on this in the solo realm, and he's just done an amazing job.
Yeah, his playing on this is so good. It's so good.
Yep. He's fast. He's just, I remember we did the drums on the second Mayfield 4 record, who Elvis recorded that record. He was the engineer, and we did it with Peter Collins. And I remember he was tracking the drums. They got the drum sounds and he starts tracking the drums. And most of those drum takes were one or two takes. And it got to the point where the engineers and the producer, everyone was just like, I've never seen this before. I mean, he's truly just kind of a freak of nature.
What's he doing outside of playing on this record? What's he doing?
He's in the corporate world. He has been for years. And I think that and he's really effective. I mean, he's this really smart person. He's good at anything he does, but the musician in me I would love to see him play more just because he's so talented.
Love it.
Nice.
Let's strip back a couple of songs here. In Stride, which is the first song we all heard. First song I heard, I think I texted you straight after that and just went, fuck, this is great. That Dobro guitar in there. Can you tell us a little bit about that? How it come together?
Yeah. So that's an interesting one, because it's one of the few, there were a handful of ideas that I'd come up with before writing the bulk of the record. So you have these snippets that I would keep like on a phone or something, just little ideas. And I came up with that in the back of a tour bus while out with Alter Bridge a few years ago. And I knew that it was a hook, cause I could remember it. And it's kind of what it boils down to. But it was, when I played it, I was on, and actually it was that very guitar, it was that Telecaster back there I played it on. And I thought, well, I don't know if it's, I feel like there's something that could be done to it to make it a little more unique. And so then it dawned on me, well, what if I take my National Resonator and put it in a altered tuning, let's put it in open D, and then I'm going to take it and I'm going to run it into an amp, and I'm going to turn up the gain, and I'm going to just experiment with that sound a little bit. And the experiment was ultimately to run it into like an old Fender Deluxe and then mic the guitar at the same time with a condenser mic. And so you'd get both the acoustic element of the resonator in conjunction with the electric. And I thought, well, that might sound really cool. So I was just actually messing around in my studio and did that. And so that was the, we ended up doing that same way in the actual real recording studio. And yeah, it's fun. I enjoy playing that song.
I remember when we were suiting up again before the end of time. We were living in a dream that never seemed to cease, never asking why. Took so much for granted. Still, we refuse to give in to the fate we've been handed. And now it's a moonshot. We can't stop until we get back to the start. There's no plan, but I don't care or give a damn as long as you're okay. Over and over again, we took so much for granted. But still, I refuse to give in to the fate we've been handed. Yeah. For the end of time. Living in a dream that never seemed to cease, never asking why.
like a Kirk Hammett? You mentioned saving stuff on your phone. Have you ever like lost your phone or lost ideas that you recorded somewhere and never found them again?
Well, I learned my lesson really early on. So yes, but not on the phone, not on a hard drive, because I'm obsessed with backing things up. Two or three backups at a bare minimum. Because in the mid 90s, during that, I think it was during that Mayfield 4, it might have been a little bit before that. It could have been during the Mayfield 4 beginnings. This was before we had phones where you could record ideas. I had a micro cassette recorder that I would carry with me at all times with these little micro cassettes. And that's where I would put all my ideas. And one day I was heading out to go somewhere and I had it with me and I put it on top of the car, got in the car and forgot to take it. And so I lost, 45 minutes of ideas that I will always wonder, was that the tape with the hit? So after that, yeah, I became a little obsessive about backing things up.
Didn't the Edge from U2 did the same thing, right?
I bet he did. I mean, I think a lot of us have. I know it happened to Tremonti. I know plenty of people this sort of thing has happened to.
Right. Speaking of Tremonti, so you're playing in a band with Tremonti who gets a lot of focus. You're playing in a band with Slash that gets a lot of focus. I think we all know you're a pretty quiet and reserved guy. You're right out in the front line now with the solo project. You know, you're really, all eyes are on you. How do you feel about that?
I think it was just a necessary challenge for me. It's interesting because I had enough folks that were just kind of trying to nudge me, like we were talking about earlier with some of those guys, the guys I look up to, like nudge me along and play more guitar. So I felt like it was time. I had a friend who'd be like, when are you going to stop messing around? Like, yeah, I like your singing, blah, blah, whatever. But he goes, I want to hear you play guitar. And you're being, I know how much time you put into playing guitar, so please play guitar. I was like, okay, all right. But as far as the focus thing goes, it is nice to be in bands where there's this dual focus or I'm not hardwired to be the, showbiz. Yeah. Look at me. Yeah, I'm the singer. That's just not in my DNA. Cause I started as a guitar player. And the only reason I became a front man was because I needed to facilitate getting my songs heard and sung. And so I was just like, all right, dude, I get it. You're a wallflower. You're kind of shy by nature, but you can work, you can learn, do you want it? Do you want to play your songs or not? Because where I live, there's a finite amount of people to get into your band. Right. And this was, years ago. And at the time I was just like, well, the way I'm hearing things, the way I'm hearing these vocals, I guess I should just try and do it myself. So yeah, I mean, to answer your question, it is nice though, stepping back into the realm with Slash and Conspirators and with Alter Bridge and having that, the multiple focus, articulate this, having it not just be about, this. So that's yeah.
as a guitar player, because you're a great guitar player. I mean, do you feel that you get better? I mean, I don't play an instrument, but do you feel you get better, or do you feel like, you know, you reach your point and this is as good as I'm ever going to get? Or what's your thought on that?
It kind of goes in strange waves where you think you hit a wall and then you step away from it and then you come back and revisit it and you go, and Mark and I have, Tremonti and I have talked about this, where then you see your gains when you come back and you go, oh, it's easier to do that now. So yeah, I used to get really discouraged early on when I wasn't making the gains that I thought I should be making. And then I discovered that, you know, I was just too hyper focused and I just needed to gain some perspective. So, but as far as the amount that you evolve when you first start versus when you've been doing it for 35 years. Yeah, there's definitely a difference. You know, I felt early on that you'd be making gains leaps and bounds. And then as you know, as time goes on, it's a slower process for sure.
Yeah.
I'm going to pull out a few more songs too. One of Nicholas's favorite, Love Rain Down.
Oh, cool.
Yes. I told you when we talked the last time that I think it's without a doubt one of the best songs you've ever written.
Thank you. Thank you and very much.
I think Nicholas said, didn't you tell me it was an old song? You'd written it beforehand or something.
You're correct. Yeah, that's a song that was written in 2009, and I had it sitting in the song refrigerator, just waiting for a place. Now I'd recorded a version of it on the infamous first solo record that never got released. I did an arrangement of that, and it was it was interesting because I played the demo for a few people early on, and people did kind of gravitate towards it. And Mark Tremonti, my brother, they were like, that's one of my favorite tracks that you've done. So please consider eventually getting that out there. And so when it came time to do this record, I thought, well, the narrative of that could work in the context of these songs, because it's really about this kind of this longing, which I think a lot of people have felt right now. So took the demo, took that initial demo, and we got in the studio. And it, interestingly enough, I wasn't even considering doing it until we were all in the studio and we were trying to figure out what songs were going to make the cut out of all the demos I'd done during the lockdown. And there was just something missing from the everything we had to pull from. And I thought, well, would you guys be interested in hearing this track that I did a long time ago? And we were all sitting on the couch listening to these tunes, and immediately it started playing and people were like, yeah, we got to record that, you know? So that's, so I'm glad we did. And I'm glad, it's nice to hear that people appreciate it, because it's an oldie.
Things we cannot stop. I guess that now we know that we've been sleeping at the wheel now that we're lost. Don't try and tell me everything's alright when we know they're not. We're burning up and burning out for what cannot. From our slumber in due time to bring about the
answers to believing while we're still alive.
Find our cause. Our hope it brought us unity and undivided culture.
Is it clear to you when it's a, say, when it's an Alter Bridge song or when it's a Miles Kennedy song? Is that point blank clear to you?
Generally speaking, yeah, it's pretty easy. Now, I will say on the title track, on the Ides of March, that probably could have, had it been treated different from a production standpoint, that could have worked in Alter Bridge, but it would have required, you know, having more riffs. And there was even a moment when we were laying the guitar parts on the where Elvis asked me, he's like, should I turn up the gain a little bit on this part? And I actually said, you know what? Let's not. Let's keep it more restrained, because the more gain we add, the more I feel like a song like that could kind of cross the lines. So let's keep it more organic, more retro, and that way we keep it out of that realm. And Mark had heard that demo as well before the song was recorded, and he'd mentioned that he thought, you know, boy, that song could have possibly worked in the Alter Bridge world, but just I knew that if I didn't put it on this record, on the solo record, I didn't really have all the pieces there. I needed that track for this record, just to keep the narrative where I hoped it would go.
Is there an emotional difference writing stuff for yourself that you don't have to present it to a band or like other band members and so on? Is there a difference?
Yeah. You're left to your own devices. You kind of do what you want to do, what you need to do. You have the advantage of not having to compromise, but you also, on the flip side, there's a disadvantage to not compromising. So it's because you're relying solely on your own filter, and that can be scary, because you can put all this time into something and then get done, and people be like, that's not good. And when you're collaborating with people, immediately you're going to get that reaction of, I like that, let's work on that. So you can kind of spin your wheels. And I'm admittedly a little bit stubborn, and it's kind of a downfall where I'll get on a kick and I'll be like, I'm going to finish this and I want to get it done. And then I've wasted a ton of time for a song that won't even make the record.
There's a thirst inside of me I can't control. There's a desert underneath that cracks my bones. There's a river that runs dry within my heart. There's a distance to your light that seems too far. Let your love run down. Let it wash away the sorrows I've found. Let your love run down. There's a storm within my heart that needs you now. Let your love rain down. It's a craving that will never come to pass. There's a hunger that will never cease to last. There's an aching that lies deep within my soul for the promise that someday I could be whole. Let your love rain down. Let it wash away the sorrows I've found. Let your love rain down. There's a storm within my heart that needs you now.
Wanderlust Begins. That's pretty high, man. Your vocals are pretty high on that track.
Tight underpants. That's the trick. No, that, and you know what? That's another older track. That was written during the Love Rain Down. So there are only two songs on this record that weren't written in the March to June, July of 2020. And that was another one where I had my wife in particular and my brother also like, are you ever going to record Wanderlust Begins? And when I was thinking about this album, I was like, you know, that track would fit the narrative because we were we were locked down. You know, we couldn't travel. We couldn't go anywhere. So, of course, you're going to have wanderlust. And so, yeah.
That's a great song. But when I was listening to it, I was like, damn, that's so high. You know, it's so high.
It's using that falsetto. Yeah, yeah. Well, thank you, I guess.
Yeah. Another one is Worried Mind. More so because of the that probably highlights this album's very bluesy. And that is the epitome of the blues on this record is really, you know, the closer is really highlights there.
Yeah, that's a definite blues track. And it's one of my favorites on the record, I think, because it allows me to step into that realm and play a straight up blues on the guitar. And I like the crescendo at the end. I feel like it's just a nice bookend. You know, you start the record out with Get Along and end with Worried Mind, and it feels like, you know, there's a record there.
And yeah. Lyrically, it's amazing as well. Every single song, you know.
Oh, thank you.
You know, I've got written down all these little lines. There's all three of these songs. There's just these amazing, you know, amazing lyrics. It's unbelievable.
Thank you very much. Well, like I said, it was a very inspired, you know, it was all genuine, the things I was feeling and we're all feeling. So you just try to spit it out with your songs, you know?
Yep. To end it, The Ides of March, the title, where did that come from? What does that mean to you?
Well, to me, you know, it means different things to different people. Obviously, it's from, you know, the Shakespeare, Julius Caesar thing. I think for me, it always implied a certain, it's like there's a prophetic element and like almost an impending doom. And I think when a lot of these songs were written, when that song was written, you know, we didn't know there was uncertainty. And so it was the possibility of how bad can this get? How dark can things be on a number of levels? And so it felt appropriate. But the answer within the realm of that song, the coda of it, when it turns into this major key and you can kind of see the clouds parting and the blue sky and that optimism. So it definitely ends on an optimistic note, which I felt was important.
Nice.
Excellent. Miles, thanks for your time, man.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Say goodbye, change is coming. Untethered realms come into view. Don't give a damn where we go or what might be. As long as I'm right here with you, it's gonna be all right. Just hold tight, wanderlust begins. Wanderlust begins. We can head down to the border. We can sink into the sea. Behind the mystery of every waking dream is a constant craving to be free. It's gonna be all right again. So baby, just hold tight, wanderlust begins. Just like the end is drawing.
'cause we